Blog Talk Radio.
I walked through the damp, foggy streets, my mind swirling. So much content, so many podcasts. How do I find the best? Then it hit me, like a big blue neon sign flashing through the mist. Blueberry. All I had to do was drop the E's and go to blueberry.com. Blueberry. The digital media interface for consumers, creators, and advertisers.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
You are listening to The Liberal Grouch.
People all going somewhere, all with their own thoughts, their own ideas, all with their own personality.
Ever since I was a child, all I've ever wanted to be was a journalist. To write stories. To be on the radio. To be an observer of the human condition. Throughout my professional life, in radio, newspapers, and as a writer with the federal government, I've been true to the journalistic ethic of telling the truth. Of being accurate, of trying to tell both sides of the story. But I've learned there are people who don't want their story told. In fact, they will do anything.
Blah, 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 blah. Well, here's what we're going to do. If you were listening, and God, I hope you were, we got cut off when my browser just kind of froze up. I guess I'm going to have to install Chrome or something like this because the Blog Talk Radio system does not work on Firefox. So what we're going to do is after the show is done and we post it online, I'll just do a little sailor hitch, you know, a little half hitch, and just tie the two ends together, and it'll be for the following listeners who check it out after the show has actually aired, as if nothing had happened. When we left, we were in the middle of the Aaron Worthing story, so let's start that again.
The Aaron Worthing story. The Liberal Grouch brings you this documentary look into the life and childhood of America's most useless lawyer, Aaron Worthing. How did he go from obscurity as a child to loathsomeness as a religio-fascist, racist bigot today? Here to tell the story is our own Hector DePeoples.
Raising Aaron Walker, Worthing, was not an easy task for his parents, Aaron and Aaronetta Worthing. Former next-door neighbor Brutus Ragdish smiled as he recalled some of the antics of the young Worthing lad.
Those were the days. I remember back in the, when was that again? The mid-60s or something? Everything kind of runs together now. It's hard to pin things down to specific dates. But I do recall when we lived next door to the Worthings. And I'd just sit in my backyard and watch through the chain link fence that the state said the Worthings had to put around their property to keep their boy in. And they had a dog at the time. It was a small sort of pit bull mix, pit bull and chihuahua. And that boy Aaron would come out and just poke his finger in that dog's eye every morning. At first, the dog would just kind of, you know, yike and kind of scurry away. And then when the dog saw young Aaron coming out in the morning, he'd just run and hide. Aaron wasn't the sharpest lad, and he thought that the dog was just disappearing on account of his not being there where he was supposed to be. But eventually, it dawned on him that the dog was actively hiding from him, so he found the dog's hiding place underneath the porch, crawled under there, dragged the dog out, sat him down in front of him, and started poking him in the eye again. Over and over and over. Poked that poor little dog in the eye till the dog couldn't stand it anymore and bit him. I mean, he bit him real good, too. Took out a chunk of his face, as I recall. And Aaron went running up the steps, and I could hear him inside the house screaming that it was his pet, and it was his First Amendment right to do whatever he wanted to that dog, and that dog did not have the right to bite him, and that his mom and daddy ought to do something about it, and I'm damned if the daddy didn't come outside with a shotgun and scatter that poor little puppy all over the front yard. I don't think they raised the boy right. It's part of the problem. Never was quick on the uptake, though. Oh, the times I could get him to come over to the chain link fence and ask him if he'd ever seen a worm crawl through a chain link fence, and he'd get his face real close, and I'd lower my zipper, and he never caught on. Okay, when are we going to start recording?
By the time he reached middle school, it was clear that young Aaron was not like the other boys. In addition to his other defects, Aaron was unable to use his right hand since he was never quite able to grasp the concept, stove hot, don't touch. According to emergency room records, young Aaron was a patient in their treatment facility 27 times between the ages of 3 and 14. Dr. Anderson Sykes was a young ER resident at the time.
Well, the first time it happens, you think it's probably just an accident. But then when it starts happening over and over again, you start to suspect child abuse. I think it was like the sixth time they brought in young Aaron within the span of 3 months that we finally had the child welfare people investigate the living conditions at the Worthing residence. Swear to God, they had the social worker sitting in with the family the whole day, and the Worthing parents stood by the whole time. And Mrs. Worthing was making a skillet full of hamburger helper or something. And young Aaron, he just kept walking up to the stove, and before he'd get there, his mama would say, "Aaron, stove hot, don't touch." And he'd look back at her and give her this defiant glance like, "I ain't gonna bother me this time." He'd reach out and he'd grab the red hot burner on the... We thought about taking the boy out of the home then, but the parents were not at fault per se, but they did suggest, the social workers did suggest that they come up with some way to keep Aaron out of the kitchen, which I guess they finally did by shipping him off to the state home for dull boys. It's not like they didn't try. They put like one of those the childhood fences that they used to keep a dog in a room, but he's clever enough to figure that out. So they tried to use a leash on him and just keep him confined within a 6-foot space of his bedroom, but he ended up almost strangling on that, so that idea didn't pan out. So the only choice left was the state school, and they took him. Things turned out, and I don't know if that was a good thing or a bad thing. He's still alive, anyway.
If such a life can indeed be referred to as living. On his 14th birthday, his parents told young Aaron that they were taking him to a birthday party at a local ice cream parlor. But there would be no ice cream for young Aaron that night, as the trip would not be the short drive to an ice cream parlor, but the long drive to the Manassas School for Dull Boys, now known as the Manassas School for Boys with nowhere to go but up. It took a while, but we were finally able to locate one of Aaron's classmates, a lumpy, middle-aged man nicknamed Target, who was employed as a mop boy in a New York City adult bookstore. He spoke to us.
Yeah. The thing I remember most about, what was his name? Aaron? Yeah. The thing I remember most about him was his nickname. Yeah, the other guys, they gave you nicknames if you're not big enough or strong enough to not have a nickname. You got assigned a nickname, and that was your name. That's how even the teachers would call you that. Mine was Target because the other boys would use me to calibrate their. They're urine streams, and they just called Aaron Toilet. I don't think I need to really go into specifics why, but that's what they called him. It was the Toilet. I must say I was a step higher on the social chart than Toilet was, and I look back at it now with a little bit of shame, because it took him forever to learn something, and that's why it was necessary, I guess. The teachers didn't have nothing to do with him, and it was necessary for the other students to enforce the standard pecking order. Pecker order, as they used to call it, to enforce that order to show Aaron that, or Toilet, where his place was in the line of things. And every time I think of him, I think of him being used as a toilet. It still makes me chuckle every time. By the way, why are we calling him Worthing? His real name is what?
The production company was forced to buy new shoes for the camera crew after their visit to that adult bookstore. The Worthing family learned to their horror that shortly before his 18th birthday, young Aaron managed to chew his way through his leather restraints and escape into the Manassas night. He apparently tried to find his own way home, and it was only after receiving a phone call from a gas station owner that they learned that young Aaron had found his way to the town center, claiming he was a fireman, a spaceman, and a cowboy. Howard Clower was the station attendant that night.
Back then, we had one of them grocery stores across the street from the gas station, and it had them little mechanical rides for the kids on them. And you'd drop in a quarter and you'd ride for a little while. One of them was a pony, and one was like a little rocket ship, and another was like a fire truck. And I don't know where he got all the quarters, but this little boy was, he wasn't a little boy. He seemed like a little boy, but I guess he was a full-grown man. He was going from one of them machines to the other and riding them for as long as they would allow him to ride for the quarter, and then he'd move on to the horse and then to the fire truck and then back to the rocket ship and giggling like a little girl. I never saw a person having so much fun. So the station owner, he crossed the street and asked the young man what he was up to, and he told him he was a spaceman and a cowboy and a fireman. And it didn't take much to figure out that he had escaped from the school of the dull, for dull boys. So we called the school, but the administration said that since he was 18 and technically an adult, there weren't nothing they could do about it, and he was free to go anytime he wanted to. So we just learned his real name and called his parents and let him sleep in the garage until about a week later when his mom and papa showed up for him.
But this was the beginning of bigger and better things for young Aaron. On their drive to Manassas to gather their son, the Worthing parents, who did not reply to several requests for interviews, discussed the lad's situation. The elder Worthing said there was only one place, one profession, where a lad of Aaron's unique disability and inability to learn, even when the result of his repeated mistakes would cause unimaginable pain and torment, could hope to succeed. And that was the law. Papa Worthing pulled some strings, greased some palms, and got a law degree in the mail from a company calling itself Yale University Law School Diplomas Incorporated. Now all his son had to do was pass the Virginia bar examination. But when Aaron walked into the exam room, all hell broke loose, as we hear from exam proctor, Dr. Harold Lint.
Do I remember? How do you forget something like that? I tried to forget it, but I can't forget it. We had this classroom filled with 20 or 30 young law school graduates who all they needed to do was pass the bar exam, and this young Worthing, fine, whatever. He walks into the examination room and he sees all these other students, and right away he urinates in his pants, standing there dripping like a tree after a rainstorm. He starts screaming the word toilet, 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 over and over again, and he dove through the nearest window, and we never saw him again. And frankly, I'm glad about that. That doesn't bother me at all. How is he doing, by the way?
And therein lies the rest of this tale. Papa Worthing was not a man to be denied something he wanted. More palms were greased, more chips were cashed in, and the state legislature passed a one-time-only exemption, allowing young Aaron to take the bar exam in his bedroom, using his computer, with an actual lawyer sitting by his side to give him the answers. Even with this assistance, young Aaron barely passed the examination by the skin of his teeth. The elder Walker found his son a job as far away from a real courthouse as possible, as a compliance attorney with a nearby home health care corporation. He purchased a fine mail-order bride, bypassing the readily available bride factory in the former Soviet republics, and choosing a plump, well-fed, compliant girl from the Philippines to be Aaron's life partner. If Aaron should someday have sex with his wife, they may, in fact, produce grandchildren. But one thing would stand in Aaron's way, something his father couldn't pay his way out of. There's not enough money in the world to take religious bigotry from the heart of a religious bigot. Now unemployed, Aaron endangers his entire neighborhood, the entire city, by daring Islamic extremists to declare him fatwa worthy. And at long last, this boy who poked his dog in the eye until it mauled him, this boy who lost the use of one hand from touching the hot stove over and over and over when mommy said no, this man who seems incredibly and absolutely incapable of learning a lesson or holding a job, he may have finally succeeded. For the Liberal Grouch, I am Hector the Peoples. Thank you for listening.
If you want to stay up to date on what's going on with the Liberal Grouch, visit the home website for this program, www.liberalgrouch.blogspot.com. Hear recent episodes or search the archives. Share your comments. Give Bill a good talking to, if you should feel so moved. The Liberal Grouch cast homepage, www.liberalgrouch.blogspot.com. And hit the tip jar to help pay for this freaking thing, you freaking deadbeats.
Throughout America today, there are men who, sad to say, are not really men. Through no fault of their own, they were born without a vital body part that helps a boy become a man. Oh, sure, we're not saying that it takes a certain chemical in the bloodstream to make a person a mature adult male. There are people, brave people, who are as manly as can be, even though they don't have a drop of testosterone in their blood. But far too often, especially among men in the Republican Party or those who cling to right-wing views, we find people who are technically adults, but are still quivering, cowardly little boys who cling to their mommy's apron strings. People who send taunting, angry tweets to people and then demand that your account be suspended if you respond. People like an adult male in his 60s. Living in Westminster, Maryland, who uses the courts the way a boxer would use his fists. There's no lie he won't tell, no self-degradation he will not endure to punish the people he feels have wronged him, although we feel he is compensating for the horrible abuse he must have endured as a pimply-faced Poindexter who thought he knew more than everyone else in his school or university. People like an adult male in his 40s, residing in suburban Chicago, who is so afraid of a man with Parkinson's disease, this able-bodied adult male felt it necessary to resort to a weapon that victims, usually female victims, used to protect themselves against their abusers. This adult male from Palatine, Illinois, has spent God knows how much of other people's money to protect himself from a man who can barely raise his hands above shoulder level. And then there's people like an adult male in his 30s living in Racine, Wisconsin, who throws dog poo at bigger, stronger people from under the front porch of his ramshackle house, then hides under the porch or up inside his mommy's skirt. Sure, we're all disgusted by people like that. It's a natural reaction. These people who choose the road of cowardice, who insult others at will, but then cry when they are insulted in return. But there's something we fellas can do to help these poor, spineless wastes of human life. Unlike women who are born with a set number of eggs in their ovaries, and once those eggs are gone, they go into menopause, a man's testicles continue to produce sperm and other male hormones well into their 90s. So the next time you renew your driver's license, ask for the proper form so you can donate your testicles to adult males like these. For each set of testicles you donate after your death, the Nuts for Nitwits Society will donate a cadaver scrotum, so the recipient of your gift will have some place to keep it. We can't promise that every recipient of a testicle transplant will grow up, stand on his hind legs, and start acting like a man, but there's hope. Fill out your form today and donate your testicles to the Nuts for Nitwits Society. Somewhere, an adult male is filling out a petition for an order of protection against a man who couldn't harm him even if he wanted to. Please, help him. And thank you.
Depending on your point of view, Bill Schmalfeld's comedy is either hilarious, mildly amusing, somewhat offensive, or worthy of an eternity in hell. We leave that up to you. However, whether you want them to happen to hold, or just want to have some really shiny coffee coasters, you can get all of Bill's CDs and MP3 downloads on iTunes, Amazon, and Google Play. Show your good taste or your tolerance for possibly criminally offensive trash by getting your own copy of the comedy, such as it is, of Bill Schmalfeld, now, at popular prices.
You are listening to The Liberal Brunch.
He eats little boys, Bobby Duck tails, big fat.
You do know that was never proven in court, right?
I can hear the lick spittles now.
He admits that he eats little boys! Did you hear him? He said it on his radio show!
Actually, that was Bela Lugosi, but... I'm Bill Schmalfeld, the Liberal Grouch. It is... about 13 minutes after 2 o'clock on this Monday, June 22nd, 2015. And I've been debating with myself as to whether or not I want to even bother going to the courthouse on June 25th to keep WJJ Hogue from getting another peace order against me. You know the moment he's denied, he'll file another one. And when he's denied that, he'll file another one. And when he's denied that, he'll find another one. So frankly, I don't care. I've already given blood, sweat, and treasure in my fight against him and his allies. I think I've proven my manhood here. I do intend to shame him. I intend to rip him a brand new asshole. But I'm going to do what's good for me. If things weren't different, I should say if things were different, if it weren't less than a week from the death of my soulmate, if I wasn't feeling compelled to move out of the state of Maryland, if I were going to stay here, it might make sense to fight him. But right now, if I had to make the decision right now, I'm not giving him what he wants. I'm done jumping through hoops for that diseased cocksucker. Hogue snaps his fingers and gets donations. No one gives me a dime. Hogue writes a sappy blog post about his beloved Connie and gets hundreds of sycophantic comments. My blog gets no comments, and the only notice online on BreitbartUnmasked.com, two comments. Well, what you gonna do? I figure it's because I'm evil. Yeah, that's it. I'm evil.
In other news, the NRA has elected an actual 55-gallon drum.
Now, I don't know why that was playing when I wanted this to play.
I tell you what, Nancy, I only trust that cabin boy as far as I could throw him.
Well, that wouldn't be very far. He is so very fat.
Giggle, giggle, giggle. You are absolutely correct.
I do not believe there is a fatter person in the whole wide world.
It's probably all those foot-long hot dogs he eats.
Oh, he loves those footlongs.
And don't forget the mayonnaise.
What's the deal with the mayonnaise?
Sure, remember? The mayonnaise is a visual representation of the bodily fluids excreted by the footlong hot dogs, which aren't really hot dogs at all, but are metaphorical representations of the phallic objects that remind the cabin boy of his dead twin brother. This is why every time we insult the cabin boy, there must be some reference to footlong and mayonnaise.
In the cabin boy's case, I would be more likely to compare him to a Vienna sausage. Now that is world-class humor. You know he is faking his Parkinson's disease.
Of course he is.
I know someone with Parkinson's and looks nothing like the cabin boy.
How could he not be faking it?
He has to be.
Have you ever seen how quickly he types?
No.
Me neither. But there's no way a person with Parkinson's can type that fast. One of the other people in the comments section said that the cabin boy wrote 11 billion Twitter posts in one day.
Wow! No way a person with Parkinson's could do that many. Amazing.
Astounding is what I would call it.
That's a good word.
All I can say is, it is the good folks like you and me that keep the cabin boy from unleashing his unspeakable evil onto the world.
Can you imagine what would happen if he were to unleash his evil?
Notice how he always talks about poop?
It's all he ever talks about.
I used to wonder why so many people who write about the cabin boy say he likes poop.
I used to wonder about that, too.
Well, wonder no more. He once wrote a column for the Daily Kos in which there was a passing reference to anal sex.
Passing? Like in passing gas?
Yes. It was a 2,000-word article, but 175 words dealt with consensual anal sex between a man and a woman.
Sweet heavenly mother of God, is that all the man can think about?
I believe that to be the case. Sometimes you have to really read between the lines. But it's always there.
Even if you have to make it up.
Ha 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 ha.
Ha 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 ha.
Ever wonder what we'd do for fun if we didn't have to keep a constant eye on the cabin boy?
No, I cannot imagine that. Like guardians to the corridors of hell? It is our job to ensure the cabin boy never knows a moment's peace.
That is true. And when he dies, I plan to find out where he's buried, set up a lawn chair, and stare at the grave just to make sure he stays in there where he belongs.
His Parkinson's will kill him shortly.
Oh yes, he will be dead soon.
I can hardly wait.
He has Parkinson's dementia, you know.
How do we justify saying he is faking his Parkinson's and then claim he has Parkinson's dementia?
That's none of our concern. The official doctrine is, the cabin boy is faking his Parkinson's disease, and that's because of the Parkinson's disease dementia he has.
Hey, I'll believe it if I'm told to.
Yes, some questions are better left unasked.
Some words are best left unspoken.
You are correct.
You are correct.
No,
no.
You are.
You are.
No,
no.
You are.
You are.
No,
no.
You are.
You are.
Crendler or Grady, you can't make up your mind which one you are. I'd like to wake up and find Crendler or Grady, fear defines what you are. I own you, I own you, I own you.
I own you.
Crendler or Grady, you're not very smart. You craven coward, you've made it an art. Crendler or Grady, fool whichever you are. I own you, I own you, I own you. You write like a moron, and I'm being kind. There's no use in fighting. What's yours will be mine. Crendler or Grady, I'll see you in court. Won't strip you naked, I'll leave you some shorts. Crendler or Grady, I own you, I own you, I own you,
I own you.
Crendler or Grady, yes, soon you will be mine. Thought you were clever, you're out of your mind. Crendler or Grady, fear defines who you are. I own you, I own you, I own you.
Oh sure, we all enjoy books, but who has time anymore? What with all our busy lives, doing stuff and whatnot. What if you could find someone to read to you, while you're driving to work, sitting on the can, or doing the dishes? Here's the answer, audiobooks. And they have a certified shipload of them at www.audible.com. If you enjoy the madcap antics of the liberal grouch, you will be pleased to know he has several audiobooks available. Just use the search thingy and spell his last name, S-C-H-M-A-L-F-E-L-D-T. There, you will find true stories, like the one about his battle with Parkinson's disease called Put On Your Parky Face. Comedy abounds, with I Killed Osama, and That Hussein Fella, too, and The Miracle Boys of Slowpoke, Iowa. Piss off your conservative friends by giving them a copy of Baby's First Book of Socialist Propaganda. And we even managed to offend Almighty God in Heaven with a two-act play called End Times. These books are also available on iTunes, Amazon, and wherever quality audiobooks are sold. Yes, they sell Bill's books, too. But get the best deals at audible.com.
You are listening to The Liberal Grouch.
Prepare. Declare. Beware.
Yes, because we're not responsible for any major or minor mental freakouts caused by listening to this show.
By the way, I hope everybody signed the mandatory... the word was right on the tip of my tongue, and now I can't think of it. The mandatory... What do you call a document that... All right, the mandatory release form, right? Releasing us from liability? Yeah, that's what I... It was a funny, funny joke, though, wasn't it? Speaking of funny, funny jokes, WJJ Hoag. By the way, I'm Bill Schmalfeld. This is the Liberal Grouchcast. You can give us a call here at 607-203-5273, or you can shoot us a tweet at Twitter. And the Twitter coordinates are at the Grouchcast. All one word, at the Grouchcast. See how easy I make it for you? Now, there are things I need to consider before I decide what to do. I got to do the old, like, on this hand, but on the other hand, but on the other hand. You know, like Tevye in Fiddler on the Roof. But what if I discover there is no other hand? Huh? Well, I've got time to think about it. And there are other things going on. For instance, the murderous nitwit down in Charleston, South Carolina. And the right wing's rush to apologize for him. Oh, it wasn't racist. There is no racism.
Sandy Hook didn't stop me. Gabrielle Giffords didn't stop me. What makes you think anything can stop me?
I can't seem to face up to the facts. I cannot tolerate the gaze of blacks. I can't sleep cause my head is on fire. I'm dressed up in my combat attire. Right wing killer, what's to say? Far better. Run away. Right wing killer, black or gay, far better. Run away. Oh,
ay, 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 ay.
It's useless. Don't you understand that yet?
They rape our wives and daughters. We just want our country back. You're talking a lot, but you're not doing anything. They're turning our children gay, and that means war. You'll know my name. I'll be on the news. Right-wing killer, and I don't play. Far better. Run away. Right wing killer, there's hell to pay. Far better. Run away. Oh,
ay, 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 ay.
It is not your fault that you're black. You made the choice to be gay. This is what God chose me for.
Maine.
Stoke the fire. Cable coverage is what I desire. Right-wing killer, have my way. Fa-fa-fa-fa-fa-fa-fa-fa-fa better. Run, 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 run away. Right-wing killer, here to stay. Fa-fa-fa-fa-fa-fa-fa-fa-fa better. Run, 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 run away.
Quoting Jon Stewart from The Daily Show, I honestly have nothing other than just sadness, once again, that we have to peer into the abyss of the depraved violence that we do to each other, and the nexus of a just gaping racial wound that will not heal, yet we pretend does not exist. I'm confident, though, that by acknowledging it, that by staring into that, seeing it for what it is, we still won't do jack shit. Yeah? That's us.
And besides, it's like the conservative punditry tells us, racism is over. Do you remember when that happened? I do. I was watching TV on a late summer night in 1967, when racism officially came to an end and the CBS television network launched a new program.
There's a Negro living next door, and that's not quite so bad. There's a Negro living next door, and he doesn't smell bad. Much we can do. Just a Negro living next door, not a Muslim or Jew. We even had it in our house. There's a Negro next door to us. And how?
The Negro next door. Sorry. Hugh Boton as Paul Smith. Barbara Battingsley as Mrs. Smith. And Luther Washington as the Negro next door.
In the yard. It has the word sold on it, and there's a moving van in the front yard driveway. Do you think it's too early to walk over there and introduce ourselves?
Nonsense. They'll probably be happy to know they have such pleasant, normal neighbors. I'll invite them to the cookout this weekend.
Oh, you're smart as usual, Paul.
Boy, I hope he plays tennis.
Well, here we are at the front door of our brand new neighbor.
I'll ring the doorbell.
May I help you?
Yes, boy. Would you let the property owner know that he has visitors? There's a bright, shiny new Roosevelt dime in it for you if you make it snappy.
Pete, do your stuff.
Sir, I am the property owner.
My mistake. Hello?
Hello?
We're your... new neighbors, Mr. and Mrs. Paul Smith.
So, you you could afford a nice house like this in a nice suburban neighborhood. good for you.
Yes, thank you. I'm chief of neurosurgery at the University of Maryland Medical Center.
Golly! I didn't know there were any neat...
What my wife meant to say is you have the advantage of us.
Oh, yes. I am Dr. Filbert Jackson.
Dr. Jackson.
Mind if I call you Filbert?
No, not yet. I don't think so.
Well then, Dr. Jackson.
Dr. Jackson.
Welcome to our lovely neighborhood. Are any of your brothers and sisters or friends or anyone you know also looking to purchase property in this neck of the woods?
Call the real estate agent.
Oh, honey, stop lying. She lies all the time. I'm the assistant manager at the Shafter Shoe Shop.
My. And you're able to afford such a nice home in a nice neighborhood. Suburban, yeah.
Well, it's not always easy.
Never mind that, honey. Say, Dr. Jefferson?
Jackson.
Dr. Jackson. I'm sorry. We're going to have a cookout this weekend. Why don't you come over?
We were planning on grilled tri-tips, but I think I can get some chicken at the shop you saved by then.
And the watermelon, honey. Haha, don't forget how much these people love their watermelon.
Fine. What day?
Saturday, 6 o'clock. Bring your wife.
I'm not married. But I do have a partner.
Oh, your medical partner?
Not exactly. Louis, come out and meet the neighbors.
Hello, I am Louis, and may I say, I love your earrings.
There's a Negro next door, and that's not quite so bad. There's a Negro living next door, and he doesn't smell bad.
Very nice, and we don't discriminate.
There's a Negro moving next door, there's not much we can do. Just a Negro living next door, not a Muslim or Jew. We even had it in our house. There's a Negro next door to us, and how?
The Negro Next Door is a Desi Lou production.
And the Liberal Grouch is a Liberal Grouch production. I'm Bill Schmalfeld. Thanks for joining us today. I've got much to mull over. Am I going to challenge WJJ Hoag's latest appeal against the district court's refusal to give him an unwarranted peace order? The man's not afraid of me. I can't do anything to him. He lied in his motion saying that I'm still harassing him. I'm doing nothing of the sort. But as satisfying as it would be to go to court and expose him for the piece of shit I believe him to be, I can see where it might be a useless endeavor because, well, it's like he keeps saying, the ram has touched the wall.
The ram has touched the wall. That was the old-time Roman battle call. And what that meant was that you must surrender your weapon tender, and Caesar would let you live. But all that matters, the ram that batters, once it touches your walls, he won't forgive. The ram has touched the wall. And in the old days, that meant towns would fall. But nowadays, some guy who thinks he's Caesar, this wheezing geezer, who thinks he's smarter than all, up to his neck in shit, he don't know when to quit. The ram has touched the wall. The ram has touched the wall.
has touched the wall, and that must surely mean the end of all of our concerted efforts to negate all the filth and hate and to give up without a fight. Yet every pervert will feel the butt hurt when they see I've got them dead to rights. The ram has touched the wall, but this specific ram, he's got no balls. And all that he can do is sit and mumble and break and crumble, 'cause he's behind the eight ball. He may not know it yet, but he will soon regret. The ram has touched the wall. The ram has touched the wall. But it is not the wall he thought would fall. This chowderhead who causes agitation to defamation, I'll see him soon here in court. This naughty whiner, a palatiner, better hope that I'm the forgiving sort. The ram has touched the wall. It turned out not to be a ram at all. Who would have guessed that stupid right-wing creep would show up with sheep? In fact, the ram was a lamb, and you should hear them cry. Now that we've caught the lie, oh, the wall has touched the lamb, poor little sheepy. The wall,
the wall,
the wall,
the wall,
the wall has crushed the lamb.
Well, I think I'll just sleep on it. Think about what I'm going to do. And I'll let you know on tomorrow's show. We'll be back live 1 o'clock every weekday from now on here on Blog Talk Radio. Thanks for joining us.
You have been listening to the Liberal Grouch Cast with Bill Schmorlfelt. This show is broadcast live on Blog Talk Radio, weekdays starting at 1 p.m. Eastern, and goes on for as long as he freaking feels like it. Then, it's available on demand on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, YouTube, SoundCloud, and on the home website, www.theliberalgrouch.net. Write to Bill on Twitter at The Grouch Cast. Again, that's at The Grouch Cast. Be our Facebook friend at www.facebook.com/TheLiberalGrouchCast. And when you visit the home website at www.TheLiberalGrouch.net, don't forget to hit the damn tip jar. These shows don't pay for themselves. Damn it. The Liberal Grouch Cast is a copyrighted production of Bill Schmorlfelt. Copyright 2015. All rights reserved.
Blueberry.
This podcast is a member of the Blueberry Network. Blueberry. No East. That's Blueberry, B-L-U-B-R-R-Y.com. Blueberry.com.